Okay, welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I am Rick Welch, and I am here with my friend Elaine Ray Clark. She's in Spain, and we've been battling this internet lagging, but we're going to do a recording now and talk about some Genesis stuff. How are you, Elaine?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Sorry about the lack of, it's probably to do with me, not to do with you, because I'm a bit in the countryside here, so maybe it might have a bit of a problem, but I don't know. But I'm sorry, I'm here.
Everything looks good right now, so let's just get started.
Excellent. This is what I'm going good.
Yeah, so we've had several discussions over the phone, two or three discussions about Genesis, and I wanted us to just talk about it here. So you have some very interesting thoughts, and so I'd like for you to share them.
Like we were saying again, you explained to me, or maybe just explain again what I asked you. What really is the idea behind covenant creation? What is the idea?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not the foremost authority on covenant creation, but I will say this: the idea is that Genesis 1 is showing like this, the overarching order of the covenant. It's not about physical creation. It's about a covenant being created, and that human beings were in existence. And it is assumed, high assumption, that God made mankind, but that in this particular Genesis 1, that the language doesn't really point to physical creation. They're saying that it points to this covenant creation. And so Adam, much like Abram, when Abram was lifted out of the Gentiles from the Chaldees and he becomes, you know, someone who believes God, Adam is like,
I can see that though, Rick, because I can read that.
Yeah.
Okay. That is very evident to me. The point I'm trying to make is that I can't see the plainness of, like you say, Abraham being taken out from the Gentiles, and then God started to use him through his son and his grandson, and then through the 12 tribes of Israel.
Right.
I can see that. I can read it. I can get that. But I can't see where it tells me that there's an assumption there. You start with an assumption and build on an assumption rather than what you can say. I mean, I'm not being unkind when I say that. I'm just genuinely trying to understand where they get that from, because I can't see. I mean, or I can go to, you know, I can say Jesus said, didn't you know that he made them male and female? Oh, yeah, but he made them male and female, but he actually took them from outside. But that's basically starting and building something that I haven't even got a real solid foundation for. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, I do. And again, one of the reasons why this was even brought up years ago, when people like Tim Martin and J.L. Vaughan started this, it stems from the full preterist eschatological view that, you know, Christ's parousia happening in AD 70, the corporate, well, it doesn't have to be corporate, evidently, what they said, but basically,
I would rather that word be collective, actually, because corporate is a very legalistic term, where a collective is more of a group of people that have gathered together for something.
Yeah, that's fine. You can say collective. The idea being that it wasn't physical in the sense, like we see that we're in the new heaven and new earth today as full preterists, but it wasn't a total decreation of the Genesis 1. What it was a decreation of the covenant into a new covenant. And so they're trying to remain consistent by saying this obviously wasn't about the physical creation. So you're saying, well, can it be both?
Well, couldn't it mimic, you know, like the temple was a shadow of something different, you know, or that the priest, the sacrificial system, the setter was a shadow, like it says in Hebrews, of something better. All the sacrifices that were given, they couldn't ever cover, but a better sacrifice was needed and came. So couldn't that, you see, when I look at Genesis, I see, again, right from the beginning, God tells the beginning to the end. We know. I mean, he says in Isaiah and all over the place, you know, who's the one that tells you from the beginning, the end? You know, any other gods there? Anyone talking? No one's speaking up, because they can't. So for me, when I look at Genesis, I see the story of Genesis after the creation, the physical creation, and Adam being the last aspect of that creation. Well, actually Eve, because he says, this is at last bone of my bone, flesh of my, which leads to the idea that he was there for a while by himself.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah. So therefore, then I look at Genesis, where it goes into, you know, the onion is peeled a little bit more. And then you go further into the story. What happened? How did it get thrown out? You know, God's created the male and female. Boy, it's wonderful. But then you go further into it and you see, well, actually, they ate from something that they were told not to. So therefore, we've got disobedience. Mm-hmm. Right? Straight away, there's disobedience that's entered the garden. So therefore, are they now still in the image of God? Because I believe that God created them with the ability to think like him, speak like him, and act like him. God doesn't force you to do that. It's like us. We desire to do the things that God fail miserably in thought, word, and action on a daily basis. But we desire, we're reaching out. We want to become that image once again that the scriptures talk about in the New Testament. You know, we're reaching out to be like that. So when I go back to Adam and Eve and I see what they have brought about, I believe that that is when you go right the way back to Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1. So because they had destroyed what we had, they had plunged us into darkness. There was no more light anymore. Yes, they might have known about God, but the relationship, the aspect of closeness wasn't there anymore. Something had died. Something had happened to them that was incredibly dramatic. So therefore, when they were put out the garden, we know that it's all about getting back into the garden again.
Right. Yes.
That's all what it's about. So therefore, for me, the story starts. I now go from Genesis chapter 3, 15, 16, and 17, and I go back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. So he's created all the physical aspect of it, just like he had the physical aspect of the temple and all that sort of thing. But now he's going to say, right, I'm going right the way back to the beginning. And I'm going to say, right, now in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, if you've got your Bible there, I don't know whether you want to put it up on the screen or whatever.
Yeah,
or...
let me try to just pull it up. Which version of the Bible do you like to use?
I've got two. I use the Complete Jewish Bible, and I use the King James. Now, some of the things that the Complete Jewish Bible says really, really cracks it for me, really sort of like hits it on the button. So you've got Genesis chapter 3.
Well, I just brought up, if you look on your screen, you'll see Genesis 1. Do you want me to go to Genesis 3? Do you want me to go to Genesis 3?
It may be playing havoc with it because you're sort of adding something different. I mean, we could just read it. I mean, if it's going out on a podcast, people aren't going to, well, I can't read that, but that's fine. But I don't know what have you got up there then? What does it say?
Well, I had Genesis 1. You want to read it. Do you want me to read Genesis 1 or Genesis 3?
Well, just read Genesis. I mean, because we have got Adam in the garden and he's disobeyed God. Well, I mean, again, you've got what he turned around and said to them. You've got it, what he said to the serpent in 14. You've got what it said to the woman about the enmity between the satanic seed and the woman's seed. Then you've got to the woman, talks about the multiplying her birth and her craving would be for her husband. Then it talks about to Adam. And then it talks about the earth will be cursed. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all of thy days of thy life. Thorns and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face thou shalt eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it thou wast taken, for dust thou art, and to dust thou shalt return. So for me, when I look at that, I have to incorporate the rest of the Bible. The rest of the Bible talks about thorns and thistles. Well, thorns and thistles, to me, talk about people. They are the dry, prickly things that really you don't want to touch. You only want to pick them up with a pitchfork or whatever, and you throw them into the fire. They're not to be touched. So I think when he talks about growing thorns and thistles, because he has now damaged his relationship with God, to bring forth anything of value spiritually, it's going to be so difficult. Mm-hmm. It's going to be so hard. So therefore, right. he gets put out of the garden. He is now covered with an animal has been sacrificed. The blood has been spilled. And so therefore, he's now covered. Now you have to go back to Genesis chapter 1. Now we've had Genesis 1, 1, 2, 3 going into the whole creation. And then what happened? The fall. Now from the fall, you go right the way back then and you go to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 again. So now this is how God is going to rectify the situation. Because okay. Adam's plunged us into this situation that calls for Christ to come in the first place. But we know that the Bible always says that Jesus Christ was the lamb sacrificed before the founding of the world. So therefore, we know that it was always God's intention for this to happen. It's not as if it was a shock to God, as if he thought, flipping out, didn't see that one coming. He did. Mm-hmm. He did. He knew it all along. And he wanted his own children. He didn't necessarily want them to come from Adam. He wanted them to come from. But again, we are all born into darkness, all of us, every single one. We have to be born into darkness so that we can be called into God's light, back into that relationship with him that Adam lost. So therefore, we become children of God. So you go back to Genesis chapter 1, and it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, it's interesting. In the Hebrew, it says, beginning created God, heavens and earth. So you've got six words. But in between the first three and the second three, there is two letters of the Hebrew alphabet. And there is the Aleph and the Tav. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at the Aleph and the Tav, the Aleph is the chief, the head, the power, the strength, the source, God. Mm-hmm. If you like, so it's the power. It's if you look in the pictograph, it's the shape of a bull's head, an ox's head. It's incredibly strong. So it's power. Mm-hmm. But then you've got the Tav that means a mark, a sign, or a cross.
Mm.
So you've got Jesus is the Word of God. So right the way it's sandwiched right in the middle between beginning God created heavens and earth, you've got the power of the cross straight away. You've got in the first sentence of the Word of God, power of the cross. Why? Because it was always going to be through the power of the cross that we got reconciled to God, which is what Adam lost when you go into chapter 3, which is why you have to then go back into chapter 1 to see what God is saying. So he says here, and now the earth was without form and void.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's nothing. It has no form. It's vacant of anything that is pertaining to God. You cannot be like God anymore. You cannot be in his image anymore. It's an impossibility. You've been plunged into something that you know nothing about. All you know is that you've been put out of somewhere. So therefore, and it says, and darkness was on the face, was upon the face of the deep. Now, the deep is the abyss. And if you've got a face of something and you've got the earth was without form and void, I'm looking at Adam there now. Adam is without form and void. He's empty. He's vacant. There is nothing in him anymore that is of any value that can do any sustaining. It's done. Mm-hmm. And it says, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. Well, we know in Adam, all are brought forth in Adam, and he was the face of all that would come afterwards. So he's the face of the deep. But there's darkness upon the face of the deep. So every single person that would be born from Adam was going to be plunged into darkness. You know, we got John 1, 1, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then you got the light. Then the light comes, and the light was the life of men. Now the light had come onto the scene because in Genesis 1, 1, it had already told you in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, because now he's gone back to the spiritual aspect of it. So it says here, and the earth was without form. So Adam was without form and void. He was empty. Anything to do with God was gone. And as he was the father of all mankind, every single thing that would come from him after that would be darkness. There was no light in anybody. There's no good. Like Paul said, there's not good in anybody. No, not one of us. None of us. Jew, Gentile, there wasn't any good. But he says there, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. So here you've got God moving around over this deep, this darkness that was coming from Adam. And he said, and God said, let there be light. and there was light. So now salvation or hope or that thought of reconnecting and sort of being sort of reconciled to God had come into existence. And like I said, Jesus Christ was the Lamb slain before the founding of the world. It was always going to be by something incredibly special. Do you remember when Nicodemus approached Jesus?
John 3.
Exactly. And it was in darkness. And he said to him, you know, unless you are born from above, which is what God always wanted. He never really wanted us to be born from Adam. And we know that because it tells us that Christ is the second Adam or the last Adam. We're born from him. That's it. Mm-hmm. We're born from above. So we come from darkness, this Genesis 1:1, this deep. And then Christ as the light, he does the separating right the way back there in Genesis, chosen, elect, foreknown of God. So they thought that's it. That's what happened right at the very start. And it said, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. So God now says he selects or distinguishes between the two. So now you've got the Spirit of God and it's upon the waters. And I think that that is when Jesus said, unless you are born of water and the Spirit, you can't enter the kingdom. So right the way back there, the Spirit was hovering over the waters. And God said, let there be light. And he separated, distinguished between the two right the way back there. That's why they could say, the apostles, that it was through the foreknowledge of God. We were foreordained. We were pre-known. We were chosen and elect from long ago. And I think that they understood Genesis, the creation account, which I think was literal, but God placed over the reality, which is the spiritual, over the top of it. So therefore, is there anything that you want to sort of say or?
No, I want you to keep going. I want you to keep on going. I'll have questions as we go, but for right now, I'm following.
Do you grasp what I'm saying?
Yes.
Does it sound feasible?
Well, it does. It aligns with John 1, where it says, you know, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, the same as in the beginning with God. And it talks about how John came as a light, but he was not that light, how Christ was the light, and his life was the light of men. All of this is lining up. Yeah.
Exactly. So therefore, when he comes into darkness, you know, and that's the whole point, that he understood that it was about being born from above. It's about being God's children. It was never about being Adam's children. It was always going to be a birth from above. And as I say, you have to be born into darkness to be able to be birthed from above and be brought into light. And the reason that you can be is because at the beginning, God's Spirit was hovering over the waters. And that's it. And I think that he's saying, unless you are born, I know that a lot of people turn to Ezekiel and speak about the water sprinkling and stuff like that. Yeah, that's a part of it. But where did that come from? There has to be a source. And for me, I think the source is right the way back there in Genesis. He's told us through Adam's disobedience and through Adam's stupidity at not just being in line with God, being obedient to God, he just went away and decided he could do what he chose to do. But it was all in God's plan. It wasn't, like I say, as if it was a shock to God. He knew this was the plan that he wanted. It was always going to be about him being the father of his children. And that's what we are. We are born from above. We are adopted into the family of God. The last Adam, the first Adam was of the earth, earthy. And we are of the earth. And that's it. We had no form or anything. But when Christ came along and we were born from above, straight away, we were spirit. We were given this image back to the Spirit of God indwelling us. So therefore, you've got this image once again being formed within us to be able to think like God. This is what you and I do as Christians. I fail miserably, Rick, every day in some shape or form. Maybe you're a better Christian than me.
No.
I've got a husband who's not a Christian, and 33 years worth, and it's all a bit sort of at times. But yeah, you know, But I am, you know, I am being forged after the image of God, because again, it's knowing that you go to God, and I mean, I don't know about you, but sometimes I just go to God in tears and say, Lord, I don't want to be this person. I don't mm-hmm. like who I am at times. You know, I speak out of turn. I do things that you don't like. And you know, forgive me, Lord. And, you know, miserable man that I am, like Paul said, you know. And yeah. I am this miserable. But who's gonna save me? Who's going to redeem me? Who's going to sort of like brush all that dirt off me and make me special? It's going to be Christ's shed blood for me, you know. Mm-hmm. But on a daily basis, you know, we go to him. I mean, I love it when he said, you know, let me wash your feet. He said, no, you're never going to wash my feet. And he said, well, if I don't wash your feet, you've got no part with me. And he said, no, not only my feet, everything. He said, I don't wash that which is already clean. Mm-hmm. You're already clean. You've been washed. He said, but I'll wash your feet. Why? Because every day you are going to tread into places either in here, through here, or your actions that you need to come to me or to each other and mm-hmm. for each other to wash your feet because right. that's where you're going to go. So again, so this is back to this desire to want to do things God's way. So right back there, God already said, I'd separated my children right the way back there in Genesis 1-3. I mean, I don't know whether there's any other questions. I love it as well. I mean, forgive me if I'm just rambling on. I tend to do this. I tend to sort of jump.
This is great. So let's go back to your idea here about going back to Genesis 1, and then you're showing how God is separating light from darkness, his children versus those who are not. But so with that same thing in mind, can you walk through the rest of Genesis 1? And then when you get to the man being made, do you see that as Christ and the bride? Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So walk us through it. I'm very curious.
Right. So you've got, and God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. It's interesting he says evening and morning. So it's like darkness into light, darkness right. into light, you know? Yeah. So therefore, the fact is that he's turned around and said, spiritually now, and I think also in the actual sort of like the creation of the physical, I think that, yes, he did separate the night from the day and the dark from the light. He doesn't mm-hmm. choose to say the sun, the moon, the stars at this particular junction. He just tells us that there's light. And there's dark and there's day and there's night. So we're familiar with the fact that there is a separation going on somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Right. So you've got the first day. And then he says, and God said, let there be a firmament in the midst. Now, if you've got a firmament, you've got something very hard, very sturdy, very strong, a foundation that is very secure. Now, mm-hmm. firmer actually in the Greek and meant means something strong, something firm, something solid, something that you can stand on. Mm-hmm. And that's firmer. And meant is mind. So now you've got the separation between the, what it says here, and the God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. Right. So now you've got the midst of the waters. Well, we've already had the separation of the waters. We know that it's those that are going to be the children of God and those that aren't going to be the children of God. Mm-hmm. So there's a separation going on there, right the way back there in Genesis. Mm-hmm. That was always the way. You know, our names were written in the Lamb's Book of Life before the founding of the world. I mean, right. So, you know, so you're going back and you're saying, well, I am a part of this waters that are separated. I am above. And we know in Revelation, it says that they're standing on this sea of crystal. It's clear. It's beautiful. So therefore, you've got this idea from the beginning to the end. We know that God's chamber. He's sitting on the circle of the earth, over the circle of the earth. In I think is it Job or I is it is
Isaiah?
It, Isaiah, yeah. So he's saying that, and I think there's something he also says in Psalms. For me, I can see that there's a lot going on here. Just this little tiny bit. That is in Revelation. There's a lot of it going on in Revelation because we know that these are the ones that are standing in heaven. These are the ones that have been earmarked for that position. They're the ones that are going to go to heaven. They're the ones that are going to go to the spiritual Eden, if you like. Mm-hmm. So he says there, and God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters and let it divide the waters from the waters. Right. So you've now got a division of the waters from the waters. And remember, it's not only spiritual here we're talking, but there's also a physical aspect to this as well. Mm-hmm. Right. Because I'm saying God made the physical, but then he's overlaid that which is the reality for him, which is the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he divides the waters from the waters. So he does. He can divide the waters wherever they go. I mean, we've got all different oceans and seas all over the earth. But again, it's dividing the waters that were already in the darkness of the abyss right there back in Genesis 1, verse 2. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right. So he says, so and God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which are above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day. So therefore, mm-hmm. there's this separation going on here. So you've also got the firmament that it says there was heaven. So mm-hmm. you've got something above it, you've got something in the midst of it, and you've got something below it. So there mm-hmm. seems to be three aspects to this firmament that is dividing that from that, and then you've got this middle part.
Mm-hmm.
But then he says on the third day, and God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together in one place. Right now, this is the start, I think, of where Abraham comes in, Isaac and Jacob, and the 12 tribes of Israel, because he says, and God said, let the, sorry?
I said, oh, that's good. I'm tracking.
Oh, you're tracking. Yeah.
I'm tracking.
So he says, right, thank you. And God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered unto one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. So now mm-hmm. you've got the waters circling this dry land, mm-hmm. but it's dry land. It grows. Well, that's the sec. That's coming afterwards. But yeah, it's got this this dryness to it. It doesn't say, he could have said, and let the land appear.
Right.
Well, I know land is normally dry, but he doesn't. Mm-hmm. He says it's dry land. So really, now this is the covenant of Moses.
Hmm.
This is the covenant now that we've got of Moses. All the rest of the waters around are now the Gentiles.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And now you've got the dry land up here. And like it says there, and God called the dry land earth, right? So you've mm-hmm. got the heavens and the earth now.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the start of this ruling class under the Mosaic law, and the earth, which is the people under the authority of it, right? Hmm. And the gathering together of the waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. So he now he's created this earth, and this is where the Mosaic law, this is where God's people, but we know that at the end of the day, they are not going to be the light of the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you've only got to look through the Bible. They were supposed to be this banner, this torch that you held up to the nations, and the nations were supposed to come, but they were just dry. That there was nothing there. There was no spiritual food. It was, if anything, it was a trickle of something that was going out to the nations. Mm-hmm. And they got to the stage where they didn't even think that the nations were worthy of it. So, right. I mean, that's how, I mean, it's like Jesus said to the Pharisees, if in fact your light is darkness, how dark your darkness is.
Right. Yes.
There was nothing, you know, mm-hmm. there was nothing. Mm-hmm. So he says, and God said, this is now the dry land has come up. And God said, let the earth bring forth grass and herb yielding seed, and the fruit trees yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass and herb yielding seed after its kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good. So therefore, now you've got this vegetation appearing. And again, when you look at the scriptures, you can see that Israel is likened to much vegetation. It's likened to an olive tree. It's likened to a fig tree. It's likened to a vineyard. I mean, you've got, so it's likened to grass. I mean, in Revelation, do not harm the earth, the trees or the grass or the herbs until we have put a mark in their foreheads.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So now you've got Israel coming up on the fourth day, but is it going to produce anything? Something it's going to produce, but it's not going to be that lush place that Christ is going to at a later date come along and introduce you once again to this wonderful spiritual Eden. He's going to take us something else. So therefore, it was always going to be dry. It was going to be barren. Yes, it was there for a purpose. It served its purpose, which was to. The law was a tutor leading to Christ. Now we have Christ. We're no longer under a tutor. So it was there for a reason. But all the way along, I mean, you look at Hebrews. I mean, you've got men of faith, women of faith there. And these were seeds that had its own seed in itself. Mm-hmm. So therefore, there were trees that really produced. There was grass, there was herbs. Even down, you know, you might only be a little blade of grass, but you produced a blade of grass. You know, you mm-hmm. might only be a herb, but you were a herb that produced something. You know, it's a bit like Jesus. He gave 1, 5, 10. You know, it doesn't matter. As long as you were green, lush, and produced something.
Yes.
That was the point, you know, because we know that majority of Israel, we know that, you know, for not all Israel who are called Israel are in fact Israel. They're not. We know mm-hmm. that. And this is what God is saying there. So he created that on the fourth day. So now we've got the first day, the second day, the third day, and the fourth day.
Now, the fourth day should be the luminaries. Have been on the third day.
Sorry,
that was the third day.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you've got, sorry, Rick.
It's okay.
I think we went off for a bit there.
We did. Yeah. We slowed down for just a moment.
Hello?
Yep. I'm here.
Should I carry on talking? Can you hear me?
Yep. I can hear you. Carry on.
Yeah. Well, as I say, we know that now we got the first day was that God would be light and there was light. God saw the light and he divided the light and he saw that it was good. The second day you have got let there be a firmament in the sky and let it separate the water. And then on the third day, you've got the dry land appearing, right? Mm. And you've got the fruit bearing. On the fourth day, now this is where it gets interesting because the fourth, fifth and sixth day are sort of put together in a way that you have to really not think about because you're a clever man. I know that you'll get it, but it's because on the fourth day you had the sun, the moon, and the stars created.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we know at the end of Israel being this that should have been producing stuff. It should have been producing fruit. It should have been going out and drawing people in. There should have been an abundance of fruit, but there wasn't. Mm-hmm. So God says, right now, I'm going to produce the sun, the moon, the stars. Now I see Christ now as the light of the world. He has healing in his wings. He is the sun, not only the S-O-N, but he is the S-U-N.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the moon now as the new covenant arrangement that draws from the sun. You can't have the new covenant without Christ. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the stars. And that's what Paul said. We shine like stars in the darkness. I think he understood what it actually meant. It was at that particular time that Christ, he was rising, if you like. He was coming into his own. This light, the nations have seen a great light. You know, and they'd never seen it before. And I think this is why God didn't introduce it back then when there was light and there was day and dark and there was night. He wanted you to know there was, but it wasn't relevant until we got to when Christ came on the scene.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you see what, are you still following me, Rick?
Yep. I'm following. I'm tracking.
Rick?
I'm here.
Hello?
I'm here.
Rick?
I'm here.
Did you hear that? Any of that?
I did. We caught it.
Did you hear any of what I said?
Yes.
Where did you get up to?
I got you. I got all the way through day four talking about Christ. So we're good. Right, keep going.
Okay. Well, you got the sun, the moon, the stars. Like I say, it was the time now for Christ to rise. It was his time to rise with healing in his wings. We know that. That was the point. We know that he is the light of the world. We know that he was the light for the Gentiles that they would come to. You know, we know that from the scriptures. All over it talks about how Christ is drawing people to himself. He's lifting up the banner. They're flowing to the mountains of God. Oh, Lord, please help.
Yeah, the internet just keeps getting weird, doesn't it? So why don't we do this? Why don't we stop
on day four?
Let's stop on day four, okay? And then let's come back.
It gets interesting on five and six.
I know. So let's stop on day four. Let's let the people who have listened to this begin to digest this that you're sharing with us. And then we will take this up. We'll go into day five and six in our next talk. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, but is there anything that you want to say about it at all?
Yes. First of all, I've never heard it spoke like this before. I'm not opposed to it because the way that you're aligning it with the New Testament and the way that I see it presented and the way in Jesus' teaching.
Yes. And it's interesting because one, remember when Jesus was talking about, I'll talk about that another time because that's probably going into day five and six, to be honest.
Yeah.
But is there anything that you'd like to ask me?
Yeah, I do have a question. Here it is. When did this come to your mind? When did that light come on?
Well, again, like I've said to you, I'm the sort of person that constantly goes over things, and I read the Bible a lot, and I pray a lot, and it's like I said to you before that at the end of the day, when I came out the witnesses, I said, never again will I listen to another man. I will make sure that I come to God. I always go to God and say, is this right? Is this right? Is this right? But I remember about 3 years ago, and I'd already known this for a couple of years, and I was telling my friends, and they thought I was a bit crazy. But yeah, they got it. They understood where I was going with it. But I phoned up Pastor David Curtis, and I wanted to run it by him. And he just sort of didn't really let me go into, like, you have given me the courtesy, which I am so grateful for, Rick, because it's a platform. And like I said to you before, that it's a frustration when you have so much within you. I mean, I could sit down and just do a study on, I mean, I wrote out, I went through the Hebrew. I've got it here. I'll just read it another time. I went through the Hebrew of Genesis, just 1:1, 2, and 3. And I wrote it out as exactly as it would have been in Hebrew if we could read it in Hebrew. But I said to him, you know, can I just tell you what I said? He said, that's covenant creationism. And I said, is it? I didn't even know what covenant create. And I didn't even really look at it because I thought, I don't get that. Maybe I was a bit naive, but I just thought, no, it starts again. It's the physical. When you get to Genesis chapter 3 and you get the fall, you get Satan, you get him speaking to the serpent, saying that actually, you know, I'm afraid that, you know, the seed of the woman is going to crush your head. You know, when she comes, that's what's going to happen. And to Eve, she was increasing her birth pains and her husband was to rule over her or be the head of the house, if you like. And that Adam would bring forth food by the sweat of his face, the curse of the ground. And it's not the literal ground that's cursed. It's the people that are made of the dust of the earth.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that your view does sound a lot like covenant creation, but it's not. It's not the same thing. I mean, I can't speak for David Curtis. I'm close to David. I love him dearly. And so I know he probably heard that and he gets attacked by these people. Well, not really attacked, but he gets a lot of, you know, his cosmology isn't looked highly upon by the covenant creationists. So he was probably being a little defensive. Yeah. I don't know, but I'm going to share this time with you and I want to walk through all of this with you. And then, you know, I'll share it with David and I'll be like, you need to check this out. This is pretty cool. Because it is physical, but also spiritual.
And it really is incredibly cool. I mean, even down to, you know, when Jesus said to them, you know, you've been, you know, push your boat out again. And they said, look, Lord, we've been out all night and caught nothing, darkness. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, it was during the day. Go out and let your nets down into the deep. Let your nets down into the deep, you know, and see what you catch. He said, but now you're going to be fishers of men. And that ties in with Genesis chapter day five. That's incredible.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to get to day five.
Yeah, well, I'm just so sad that it's like it is. But I give you, you know, full marks for allowing me to speak, because I've never heard anybody say this ever, Rick. Mm-hmm. And I can see it all over. It's a bit like when you first engage preterism. I call it pastism. I'm a pastist. I mean, you know, there's a futurist and a pastist. I say I'm a, because it sounds too not Bible. If I say to people I'm a pastist, they say, what does that mean? I say, well, you're a futurist. I'm a pastist. So they actually know by saying that, whereas preterist, it sort of sounds a little bit hoity-toity and, you know, a bit of a Greek word or whatever. Let's keep it real, like Jesus. You know,
I get a lot of Latin. Praetor for past. That's all it is. Yeah, you're a pastor.
It is, but I want a pastist. It's far simpler. Yeah. You know, and all the words, sometimes, you know, I listen to talks and I think, you know, they use this word and that word. And I think, well, why don't you just say it like it is? You know, it's just going back on itself, you know, because there's some people out there that don't understand a word that you might, recapitulation is one that I hear an incredibly large amount, you know. But right. They're, you know, why not just say it's going back over on itself? Because Jesus, for me, you know, you become all things to all people, and all people are listening. And sometimes it almost sounds like the Bible, instead of it being something that is for all of us, that is for those little people, you know, like when Peter and that were before the Sanhedrin, he said, who are these men? They're just ordinary and unlettered, you know. But in the eyes of God, they were treasure. You know, and it's just these, but that's how you get looked at sometimes. You know, you use these words, and I think there's people out there that maybe, I don't know, sometimes it just sort of detracts from the beauty of the gospel. It becomes more knowledge rather than the beauty and the love of it. You know, it's like Paul said, if I have all the knowledge and I don't have love, sometimes you'd be spouting out a lot of knowledge, but then there's a lot of love in it.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, that's only my small little observation when I listen sometimes.
And I hope for you, Elaine, that because you've had all of this time and how it's been bottled up for so long and how you feel like you're ready to get this out, that this will be a good cathartic experience, not only for you mentally, but it will be something where you can finally just say the things that God's taught you. And I think it's perfectly fine. And I want you to do it. And we're going to continue this until you get it all out from Genesis to Revelation. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, we'll be here a long time.
That's okay. But, I'm here for it.
Oh, bless you. Well, as I say, thank you so much. I mean, do you want to come back again next Tuesday, the same time?
Next Tuesday, same time. Let's do it.
That will be wonderful. And if you've got any questions in the meantime, if you want to go over it, there's going to be, the more you start thinking about it, scriptures are just going to pop into your head.
Yeah, that's what happened whenever I started understanding the fulfilled eschatological view. Things really started making sense. So I'm looking forward to this. So don't hang up. I'm going to end the recording and then let's chat a little bit after the end of the recording. Okay.
Absolutely.
Thanks for today. This has been wonderful.
Oh, and bless everybody that's out there as well.
Yes. Bless everybody out there.
Mwah. Love you all. Yeah, exactly.
Love you all. Bless you. All right. We'll see you next time.